Okay, so Ravi Gumadi and Anupam Khulbe have are going to kind of do their MS thesis defenses. It's a somewhat unusual situation. In their case, they both have worked very closely on a project, different parts of the same project. Unlike in other cases, they also played a very serious, I mean, they pretty much took the initiative in defining the project to begin with, and then worked on various parts of it together. And given the, you know, normally this happens, this kind of thing happens when one student completes some part and then another student who comes later would build up on it. In this case, they were together at the same time. So we asked the graduate college whether there is any better way to do this than just forcing them to write completely different thesis, given that they worked on a very close project. And Mr. Michael Dixon, the dean of graduate college, got back to us and essentially said that they can have a thesis where the introduction and the conclusion chapters are different. And in the introduction, both of them write separate introductions as to how they got involved in the project. And in the conclusions, they both separately write their specific contributions, the way they see it, their specific contributions to the project, and what are the ones that they think they have worked together. And then the defenses themselves have to be syntactically separate. Now, that's what he has sent. I mean, I'm going to show this to you. So I guess the committee, the official committee, is myself, Pat Langley, who are kind of the co-chairs of this, and Ji Ping, who is going to make sure that we aren't making anything up. And so I'll give you this email, too, from Dick for, Dixon. So regarding the talk itself here, rather than, again, since they have their contributions are interspersed, I thought it would make more sense if they present one continuous talk with them taking turns to different parts. So for example, if you go to the next slide, so they are essentially going to take turns you know, without too much interruptions. So Ravi will provide the larger motivation for the work and the themes that, you know, got them interested in doing this. And then Anupam will provide the technical part that they had to develop. And Ravi will then again come back and provide the experimental results as well as the conclusions on future work. At the end of the slides, they actually repeated again what they the last slide there says individual contribution, which actually says which parts are primary contributions of which of them. We didn't necessarily go that order because we wanted the talk to be more coherent to the people who are listening here. So what I would like to do, since the defenses still have to be separate, what I'd like to do is they will present this talk. While they are talking, you can of course stop them and ask questions during the talk. And then you know, both of them can answer, or if you want a specific person to answer, you can do that. And then once that is over, for the closed part of the defense, we would do it one by one. So one of them leaves the room, and we can ask any questions we want with the other person. And then the other person leaves the room, and you ask this. So this way, we would have syntactically satisfied all the requirements, and we will be sure that none of them were sleeping during this whole time. And I think graduate college actually appreciate their flexibility in letting us do this. I think otherwise it would have been more hypocritical to just make up two different pieces. Okay, so that's the thing. So without any further delay, I'd like to have Ravi, I guess, start the
So we'll put the slides in the presentation.
Good afternoon, all of you. So today I'm going to present our thesis topic on improving retrieval accuracy in web databases using attribute dependencies. This we have been doing this work for the past 1.5 years with Dr. Rao and Dr. Pat Langley. So this is the talk is, as Dr. Rao told you before, the talk is going to be a combined talk where I am going to give you introduction. In fact, the introduction is like much more like a motivation and a brief abstract view of the approach. And then the experiments and the conclusion, I would be taking part. And the remaining, the system description, query processing and the learning, Anupam is going to take care of. So let's get started with the introduction. So the introduction itself is actually split. This actually gives you a kind of more detailed overview of the approach, not just the, just motivates the problem. In this case, first I will start with a brief review of your traditional query processing on traditional databases, which is like most of you who have done our undergrad database courses would have known, but just for to make the motivation more clear, I would just give you a brief overview of traditional databases, and then I would just discuss how the advent of web databases has changed the underlying assumptions in traditional databases, and then I will discuss about the challenges in the data model and the query, and finally then I will discuss about the different approaches which we can take to answer them, and then finally I will end it with a brief overview of our approach and the formal problem statement. So let's get started. So let's consider a table from a vehicle domain. So this is a table from a vehicle domain which kind of contains all the attributes describing the entity of that particular vehicle, in this case vehicle. So in this case this particular schema which we call the universal relation describes the vehicle completely. So as you know, maintaining the data in this kind of setup is going to be very you have a lot of redundant data, and a lot of data is going to be, and you have a lot of issues with repetition of the same entity. So usually in this case, in traditional database systems, we have a database administrator who actually takes. Oh, sorry. So the database administrator would actually take care of data modeling, data design, and optimizing the I/O cost. So he actually manually observes the whole universal relation, and then he does a lossless normalization. By lossless normalization, what I mean is, any query would give you perfect results on the whether it is issued on this table or the partitions of the table which I am showing now. So he is going to organize the data in such a way that there is going to be no loss of information, and the joins could be perfect.
Why is it called normalization?
Normalization.
Why are databases?
No, he's asking why is it called normalization. So the normalization, so what we call, there are different kind of normal forms, 1NF, 2NNF, 3NF. So which actually gives you kind of, in the 1NF, what the database administrator tries to do is organize the information into different logical entities, and 2NF he tries to remove the redundancy, and the 3NF he actually does not remove the columns in a particular table which is not dependent upon the key. So
okay, I mean, was previous table abnormal?
No, this is not a normalized table. This is a big table which has all the redundancies and everything.
Okay. So
explain, for example, what could you get by normalizing your database?
So
you're just assuming that he understands already, but you can provide the.
Okay.
What are the advantages of normalization, not just the names of normalization?
Okay. The basic advantage of normalization is to eliminate redundant data and optimize the storage. And in a particular sense, like if you see the same the data here, you have the address being repeated multiple times, the address in this final column.
Okay.
But if you see here, he will make sure that the address is going into the dealer info where you have it only once. So and in a traditional database, we have what we call as primary keys. Primary keys are essentially a unique identifier of each row in this particular table. So primary key should be unique in this particular table. And foreign keys are the columns which are referring to the primary keys in other tables. So we'll just see a sample query in a query in a traditional database setup. So select make MID model from cars processor, cars for sale and car reviews, and cylinders is called 4 and price is less than 15K. So here you can observe that the query is fully specified. It has the tables in it. It has the attributes specified and the constraints specified. And what you get is an accurate result set. So this is like perfectly valid and it doesn't have any inaccuracies. So we will just examine the different reasons why the result set is accurate in a traditional database. So first thing is you have complete data, you don't have any missing data in the traditional database. Second thing is the query is certain, you don't have any kind of impreciseness in the query. And the third is what we just described as lossless normalization. The tables are normalized in such a way that there is going to be the queries are going to be answered perfectly. So all these three are the reasons for accurate results in a traditional database. And we would at the end of the talk we would see how this do not hold in a web database setup. So after the advent of web, so you don't have any more centralized authorities like database administrator who controls the whole data in a particular database. Because with the advent of databases like Google Base or Amazon SimpleDB, what happens is the lay users is given the power to actually populate the data into the databases. So in the context of vehicle domain, let's see who are the potential lay users who are interested in populating data into these databases. First thing is used car dealers, car reviewers, engine makers, and customer selling cars. So each one of these users has a different perspective of the data about the vehicle entity. So he is going to populate the attributes which he knows into the web database. And then, but they might share attributes or might not share attributes, and the shared attribute might be the key or might not be the key, because there is no control over how the users populate data onto the web database. So let's see a sample data model, tables with few tuples which are populated in this setup. First one is used car dealers. So this contains the name and address of that particular dealer, and car reviewers give you the review and the dealer name and vehicle type of that, whereas the engine makers give you the exact engine details with the cylinders, and customer selling cars would have the cars which they are interested to sell off. So this is a sample data model in this particular case. So let's observe what are the challenges or problems in this particular data model. First important and very well-known problem in database community in such kind of setup is the schema heterogeneity. Here you can observe that the model is named in different ways. This particular model is named is in different naming conventions in different tables. This is because you can't enforce a web scale naming conventions, and this leads to this leads to users giving their own names to the attributes, though they represent the same entity or same at column name. So this would result in schema heterogeneity. This is the major problem, and it has been well studied in the database community. And the second thing is unavailability of information. This is caused because here if you see the MID, which is like a kind of more detailed information of a vehicle, many of the lay users might not actually know what the model ID of particular model is. So he would end up just specifying the model name and missing out the model ID. Let's go to the third thing. So even if you have a primary key in a particular table, you might not have other tables referring to that particular column. So in this case, the engine is actually a primary key for the engine makers table, but this is not actually referred by any of the other tables. So even though we have primary key information in one of the columns, we can't use it to join the tables across the database. And the last and final thing is VAN field, which is actually present in the first table or in a traditional database setup, is not present in a web database setup, because users are skeptical to populate information about sensitive data. So you can't expect them to populate information about this and use it to join the tables. And in most of the cases, this is more of kind of a key information. If you take in a normal census database, it's like a SSN number, which is kind of a key information. So these are usually used in traditional databases and which are not available in web databases. So in a summary, we have these four major problems: schema heterogeneity, unavailability of information, key might not be the shared attribute, and VIN field being masked. So let's revisit the vehicle database which we have described before. So these are the different tables which I have described in the previous slides. So the tables are going to align themselves in an ad hoc manner without no centralized control. So what attribute each table is going to share with other tables, we never know. So this is one of the important challenges in a web database, in autonomous. More than the scale of the data, it's more about the autonomous nature of the web, which brings in this problem. So given a user is unsure of where to issue his query, and even if the query is issued, how the tables are going to be joined is not very clear. So what we call this problem is ad hoc normalization, because the user in an ad hoc manner normalize the tables as opposed to a database administrator in a traditional database. So we just reviewed the challenges in the data model, but there is another aspect in a web databases which is challenging as well, that is the query. So in this case, if you see, this is a traditional database query where you completely specify the table names and the cylinders and the constraints and the attributes. But in a web database, the tables are not visible to the user. The web databases don't allow the users to see the table names because it's kind of have security and privacy issues. And the second thing is the users themselves are not sure about what all other attributes are there in the database, in the web database. So this leads to two important challenges. One is the impreciseness of the attribute specification. The second being the tables not being table not being visible to the user. So a system which is going to address this issue first has to figure out the tables to which it should join, and then and also retrieve other column names from the tables which are in the web database. So these are the two important challenges in a web database field. So to summarize, we have challenges in the data model, which are like schema heterogeneity, hidden information, and unavailability of information. And in the query aspect, we have query being partial. So we will just try to, given this kind of problems, let's try to answer this using some of the naive approaches which we know, like which we all know from an undergrad database course. So let's try to answer this query just from a single table. So assume that somehow we pick the most relevant table from the web database. So in this case, the customer selling car is the most relevant table for this particular query. This is because it has two make model in this particular table, and one of the constraint also being mapped. And of course, if all the constraints and attributes are mapped onto this table, there is no problem, because you can obviously evaluate all the constraints locally, and there is no problem of creeping in noise, inaccurate results. But in this case, usually in a web database scale, it's highly unlikely that all the projected attributes or constraints are concerning to a single table. So what happens is, in this case, you have an inaccurate result. This Camry, which has actually six cylinders, is not, the cylinder information is not in this particular table. It is not local to this table. What this results in, this result being creeping into the final result set. So this obviously hurts precision and gives you wrong answers. So this is like this. So in using a single table just by answering from the most relevant table is going to give you inaccurate results. And the next and more reasonable approach is joining the tables over which the constraints and attributes are distributed. So in this case, let's see, make model are in this particular table, cylinders is in this particular table, price is in this particular table. So just join these two tables and answer the queries. This would actually give you perfect answers in a traditional database setup. This is how normal traditional query processing is done. But one important thing is, in this case, model is not the primary key, and here the models do not share a PKSK relationship between these two tables. A PKSK relation, primary key foreign key relationship. Yeah. So the model is not the primary key here. It's if you can observe that there are two civics, two Corollas, it's not unique. And here, so obviously joining this, so you can't retrieve a single tuple from this particular table based upon a model name. So what happens is the civics get joined to both these civics. So in this case, civic gets joined to these civics, and Corolla gets joined to both these Corollas. So what happens is you have some entities like this which are not actually there in a master table. So if in a traditional database, if you normalize like this, these two tables would not have been there in the original tables. So what we are the main requirement of a query processing is that whether you issue queries on a master table or normalized table, you should get the same result set. But this is not going to hold in this particular case. You have spurious entities, and this is like this. Actually, if you just see here, you have just an extra, just two extra repetitions, and you have two spurious entities in the result set. So in a web scale, you can observe how big the problem is going to be and how much it is going to hurt the precision. So actually our experiments reinforce that the precision is actually far lower than what we even think of. But one thing we have to notice here is that it also always retrieves the right answers also. So how many false positives it retrieves, it also gives you the correct results also. So obviously the recall will be higher because it's going to always get the all the correct answers from the master table. So that's the thing, but obviously it also generates a large number of spurious entities. So though the recall is higher, the precision is going to fall very down, is very low. So these are the two approaches which are like what normal traditional database processing uses or query processing uses, and these do not hold in a web database setup. So we'll just examine. So I explained you intuitively why this is not working, but based upon the traditional query, how the traditional query processing evolved, we will just make a brief overview why this is not working. So the rules of normalization is what we read in our database course. So the rules of normalization: eliminate repeating groups, eliminate redundant data, eliminate columns not dependent on key. So these are taken care of a database administrator while he is actually normalizing the tables. But in a so nobody is going to ensure this in a web database. So we can't ensure any one of these in a web database. So what this results in is the problems which we have just discussed. So, but this third point actually gives us a hint on how to counter this problem also. It tells that eliminate columns not dependent on key. The dependent, so it shows that all the columns are dependent on the key in a normalized traditional database processing. But whereas the same assumption is not holding an ad hoc normalization. So given that this assumption is not holding, how to deal with this problem? Shared attribute is not the key. I mean, we don't know whether it is a key or not. So the information, the relation between the attribute and the other columns is not known. So one neat idea is to learn the dependencies between the key and other columns and use them to for query processing or further normalizing the web databases. But normalizing further data, the web database is not a feasible solution because nobody is going to allow you to normalize them further. So what you need to do is use those functional dependencies. But given that the amount of noisy data which we have in a web database, this is not going to be possible. So there will be very few valid functional dependencies in a web database setup. So account that into the main dependencies. And these are widely known as approximate functional dependencies in a database community. So use them rather than full functional dependencies to answer the queries. So this is a brief overview of what approximate functional dependency is. So if you know functional dependency, it's analogous to what normal functional dependencies. So in approximate functional dependency, it also has a determining set and a determined set.
I don't think it's everyone knows what a functional dependency is.
Okay, so functional dependency is like a determination between two columns in a table. Like in this particular, if you see in this particular table, if you say model determines engine, and all the tuples in this particular table hold are valid for that particular relation. So every model uniquely determines the engine. So what this is what we call as a functional dependency in a traditional database setup.
It's a one-to-one mapping.
Yeah, kind of. Yeah,
yeah.
But it's like a directional. It's directional. It's at the column level. It's not at the value level. We say that in a model determines engine is a functional dependency. That means all the tuples are going to uniquely determine the engine in this. So if you know the model in that particular table, you are going to know the engine of it in that particular table without 100%. Yeah, it's not one. It can be like model engine determines number of cylinders. Yeah, it can be. The determining set can be has multiple attributes. Yeah, yeah.
So mathematically, it's a function, although we usually don't have a function.
Yeah. So the only change in approximate functional dependency is that there will be some error tuples which are not valid for that particular functional dependency. In this particular state, so if you have, let's take this example, nationality determines language. Usually this holds for most of the countries, but like in countries like India, it does not hold. So you have a lot of languages. So this is one of, like, it does have anomalies, but it generally holds over a larger set of. Yeah. So.
Last one. It should be job title experience and gender.
Okay. Yeah. So you have these are the kind of approximate functional dependencies you have. So how are you going to use this AFDs for query processing? So given this, so what we do is learn this AFDs by some process and then use this AFDs to actually do the query processing in the same query which we have discussed for the other two approaches. And here you have an AFD called, we can mine an AFD called model determined cylinders from the table engine makers. So using this AFD, we can actually get a accurate result set even though we didn't have the join information. So this is how AFDs are going to help in query processing in our system. So the more details, this is actually a brief overview of what the approach is. Mine the functional dependencies, use them to propagate the constraints and predict the attributes and retrieve an accurate result set is what our system actually does. So each module is then explained further. So let's summarize what we had seen. So as you have observed, this is not just the introduction. We actually looked at different approaches. And we also saw how we can intuitively solve this problem. So first thing is the traditional query processing has some assumptions which do not hold for web databases. So to counter these kind of counter this lack of information like missing data or imprecise query or lossless normalization, we need novel system or systems or frameworks. So in our case, our main contribution of this work is that missing PKSK information is going to lead to primary key foreign key information is going to lead to inaccurate joins. And yeah, but we also assume that the schema heterogeneity can be countered by the existing frameworks, but even that is not going to be sufficient for the query processing techniques to answer the queries properly. So use mind the functional dependencies and use them for making up PKSK information. This is a formal problem statement of our work. Given a collection of ad hocly normalized tables, attribute mappings between the tables, and a partial query, return user an accurate result set, which is going to determine as many attributes in the universal distribution as possible. So this is what the motivation of our work is, and this is what the formal problem statement of our work is. So the next couple of sections are going to describe the system called SmartIn, which we develop, and the different techniques which we use in each of the module. And then I'm going to tell you about the experimental evaluation. Anupam is going to take up the one.
So just to be clear, so the result may be incomplete because we can only do so much, but it could be incomplete in terms of either missing rows in the universal relation.
Yeah, yeah.
Or missing columns.
Hmm. Yeah, definitely. Yeah, yeah. But the main contribution is that the other approaches are not going to give as much accuracy as we are meant
to. But you're going to be trying to improve both the number of rows
and
the number of columns.
Yeah, yeah. See, so the number of rows, yeah. The first thing is the normal join would give you all rows. So its recall is almost equal to 1. But then with the, though it gives all the rows from the master table, what it also gives is a large number of spurious entities, and it's almost like the precision is very low in this particular case. So what we give, even though we give 90% of the rows from the master table, we don't give a lot of spurious entities as the other attributes.
You don't give what?
The spurious tuples.
So you're not, so with respect to rows, you're trying to improve the precision.
Yeah, exactly.
And
yeah, exactly. Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. Thanks.
And
so the accurate results, so in the experiment evaluation we mentioned, we'll show that it's in both in the terms of precision and recall. So if you just go for recall, you can get a high recall using normal join methods. But the problem with that is what I showed in the previous slide, it is going to give a lot of spurious entries and the precision is going to fall down a lot. So what we use is the harmonic between the precision and recall, the F measure. We measure the cumulative accuracy of our system in the terms of F measure and show the improvement.
And this universal relation you're talking about, that's just a notional thing. It doesn't really exist.
Yeah, exactly. This doesn't really exist yet. Okay, any more questions? Okay, so Anupam is going to take up the talk from now.
So now let's have a look at the SmartIn system and the approach it takes to solve the problem that we just discussed. So here we have a bunch of autonomous web databases which are being arbitrarily updated by web users. And like we mentioned in the problem statement, we rely on attribute mappings between tables being provided to us. So in presence of these attribute mappings across the tables, we can see these databases as a graph of tables partially connected through attribute label mapping. One of the components in the system is like AFV Miner and Statistics Learner. The aim of these modules is they examine the underlying data and mine statistical information which is later used while query answering. Let's see what happens when a user issues a query to these databases. It's first captured by the source selection module, which basically returns the best tree of tables relevant to the query, which is then later passed to the tuple expansion module, which processes it further and gives the final results. At a high level, the system can be seen as having two high level components, like the learning part and the query processing part. Learning module is an offline system which beforehand does all the data analysis and extracts all the statistical information needed to answer queries. Now let's have a look at the related work relevant to each of these components. So there's been plenty of work done at automating attribute extracting attribute mappings between databases like LSD, SemiFlood, Cupid, Cement, and Clio. I must mention here that although schema mapping and attribute mapping are sometimes used synonymously, but they are slightly different terms. So attribute mapping is just correspondence between attribute labels, while schema mapping is a deeper concept where it also involves translation rules across schema. Like I said, we just need attribute mappings. The system just relies on attribute mappings, which is related. Right?
You said translation rules across schemas, but translation of what, if not the attributes?
So basically, it's like translation rules are like if you query if the query is issued on one system, which is mapped onto another system, you need translation rules to reformulate the query so as to make it applicable to the other table.
And what I'm asking is, how is that involved more than mapping the attributes? You're distinguishing this from attribute mapping.
Right.
And I want to know what more is involved in that.
So, in mapping, just finding the attribute mappings, all you need is just a way to find out if two columns are semantically same. Right. But one thing that you may need in schema mapping for translation rules is that two attributes might be semantically related, but they may not use the same set of overlapping values. For one example is, let's say, one column using Chevrolet as a manufacturer of the car, and other using Chevy. So you need. Right. So, like I said, we just need attribute mapping, which is relatively easier to find and automate.
Exactly, it can be even more complex than that. So, for example, the unit query is that upfront cannot be answered at all, but you can, so for example, if you want to get out the book that Amazon database has, there's no way of doing it. Okay, because you can't ask Amazon any other book. They only give you a few books at a time. However, you can write a recursive query translation scheme, which basically says, ask for a few books, then look at the related books that Amazon gives. Ask for them, then you get the related books. As you're doing this, you're essentially. So, in a way, query translation can tell you how to answer any query on this set of tables, part of which could be just attribute mapping and value mapping, but it can be much more than that. And in fact, the schema mapping completely. And you don't need any of them, but that's very, very hard to do because there are nobody sitting there writing how to answer every query.
There has been plenty of work done at which basically tackles the problem of lay users not having enough knowledge of the underlying data sources that he or she is trying to query. So one set of work like VAG, AIMQ, and QUIC, what they do is they try to capture the inherent imprecision in the user query and reformulate it to get the data which is more relevant to what the user is actually looking for. Another body of work aimed at making things easier for the user is keyword search systems like Banks, Discover, and Kite. What they really do is, instead of imposing a requirement that users should give structured queries, they allow just the user to specify keywords, which are then reformulated into a query more suited to the underlying data sources. Banks and all these works rely on PKFK relationships being given to them. Banks and Discover, these systems have the expectation that PKFK relationships are provided upfront, while Kite system can mine the PKFK relationship. But I must mention here that the web autonomous web database scenario that we are considering, like we motivated the problem, it may very well be the case that PKFK relationships are missing from the data in the first place, so which renders these keyword search systems somewhat unsuitable for the scenario. There has been some work aimed at answering queries over web databases by Avis and Lembo. A work from DB Ocean Group, QPR, is similar to our work in the sense it tries to exploit learned AFDs in doing missing value prediction. So, functional dependency or approximate functional dependency mining is aimed at finding all the valid FD or AFDs in the underlying data. Some of the older work in this regard, like Cords and Tain, what they do is mine AFDs as an approximation of FD by keeping track of non-conforming tuples. Non-conforming tuples are ones, had they not been there, the dependency would have been completely functional dependency. A more recent approach to AFD mining by a former DB Ocean member, Arvind Kalvagattu, has a different take on this work. AFD miner sees AFDs as condensed or lifted versions of value level association rules and proposes a new way of mining AFDs. This work also introduces a new metric called specificity other than confidence for AFDs. We'll see later how we use specificity measure in SmartInt for pruning strategy. Now let's have a look at the query processing approach that we take. So the query processing part mainly involves a throw selection intended at selecting a relevant tree of tables and the tuple expander, which basically then populates the tuples given the tree of tables. Here's a typical scenario where you have a bunch of tables connected through attribute mapping, and let's see, there's a query. User wants to have make and vehicle type for cars where number of cylinders is 4 and price is less than 15K. We can see that the constraints are distributed across tables and so are the attributes. So we need a way so that the final result that we generate conforms to all the constraints scattered across tables. Now why is this a problem? If we see at the traditional SQL join based systems in a scenario where PKFK relationships are present, partial results generated by processing scattered constraints when joined across PKFKs generate results which end up conforming to all the constraints. This is not the case when PKFK relationships are not available in the underlying data. So what we need is a way to process all the constraints collectively. Similarly, we need a way to integrate attributes which are scattered across the tables.
What are the constraints?
It's the price should be less than 15K and number of cylinders should be 4.
Oh. Those are integrity.
So let's see what's the query answering approach that our work takes. So what we do is, given this graph of tables and a query, we select a tree of tables and propagate all the constraints to the root table Now we have a way of looking at all the constraints collectively. Once we then we go ahead and process these constraints, all the translated constraints on the base table, which gives us initial set of answers, the base answer set or the seed tuples, which are later expanded by using AFDs to pull in additional attributes which are not available in the base table.
So
the source selection module of the system selects the most relevant tree, which is then later processed. Right. Although you could answer queries from a series of trees. So the. So it's like it could have further children table. So it could be.
Would that be another child of the one on the lower left?
Right.
Left
yes.
Top?
So it's the typical tree structure where you have one table at the top. It will have children tables.
Yes, but what I want to understand is, if there were another table that was had the same kind of content as the one on the lower left.
Right.
Would that be a child of the one on the lower left or the one on the top?
It depends on the graph structure and. It could be either way.
It probably would not be either way in this particular case. I mean, how did you never really told us how you built this tree, I don't think. So.
Right, so we'll come back to it later in the source where we have the relevance metrics for the trees.
So for each query, you build a tree.
Right, so first you build a tree and process that to get the answer.
Time consuming to build a tree for each query.
So we have some, we employ some greedy methods to speed up the process. So the role of AFDs, AFDs are involved both in propagating the constraints as well as doing value prediction. And so the direction in which you propagate your constraints and make perform attribute prediction matters, which basically means which tree of tables you select. Ends up determining what's the quality of your final answers, which leads us to the source selection. Which basically the objective of source selection is, given a graph of tables and a query, select the most relevant tree of tables of up to size k. So the requirements which we have here are while selecting the tables, you need to estimate the relevance of trees as well as tables. So how do you estimate the relevance of a table when some of the constraints are not all the constraints are mapped onto it? You have a requirement that you want to know the relevance of a table across with respect to all the constraints, not just those mapped onto it. Similarly, we need a relevance function to estimate the which tree is the relevance of a tree. So to deal with the first problem that not all the constraints are mapped on the same table, we make use of constraint propagation. Let's have a look how the whole process works. So here we have two tables and two corresponding constraints, and other information that may be available is the attribute mapping and an AFD where the mod MDL determines the cylinder. So we may if we select table 1 as the root of the tree, we want to propagate all the constraints onto that table. So let's see how we can propagate this constraint onto table 1. So we make use of the AFDs, and the translated constraint may look something like this. If we have a look at the data here, Corolla and Civic are likely to have 4 cylinders. On basis of that, you could translate the constraint like this. In more general terms, the AFD, or rather the underlying value level association rules, give us the probability that what's the probability that a given model is going to have 4 cylinders, and you can select all the models having the probability above a certain threshold. So now let's see how we measure the relevance of a tree. Before we actually go into the actual relevance function for the tree, let's see what are the different factors which could affect the relevance. So like I said, the root table, the base table or the root table provides the initial set of answers which are later, which are then subsequently expanded using AFDs. So the initial set of answers that you get out of that table have an effect on what's the quality of your final answers. Similarly, what is the extent of value overlap between attribute mapping? So if you want to expand the tuples from the root table, it better be the case that the there's a value level overlap across attribute mapping. For example, if this corolla, this value corolla is not present in this table, there is no way you can make use of this attribute mapping to make predictions. Another factor that plays a role is AFD confidence. Given that we are trying to estimate the value or predict the value of vehicle type, our prediction accuracy depends on how strong the AFD is. So combining all these three factors together, we get the relevance function as, so the relevance of tree is relevance of the root table of the tree with respect to the query plus the cumulative predictive accuracy for all the attributes that are not being provided by the base table. Here, prediction accuracy is basically an estimate of how accurately can you estimate the value of that attribute starting from the base table, which is, in this particular case, prediction accuracy of vehicle type will depend on what's the extent that the two model attributes here share values and what's the confidence of AFD model determining vehicle type. So now, given that the relevance of tree depends on relevance of its root table, that brings us to, now how do you measure the relevance of a tree table? So let's consider this particular tree where all the constraints have been propagated to the base table, and you want to measure the relevance of this particular root table. So let's see again what are the factors involved. So relevance of a table is measured along two dimensions. First is the horizontal relevance, which basically captures how many of the query attributes are being provided by the table. In this case, the user is looking for make as well as vehicle type, and out of those two attributes, the table provides one make attribute. The other dimension is vertical relevance, which basically captures what an extent are the tuples from that table going to conform to the query constraints. Combining these two dimensions, we measure the relevance of a table like this, where the vertical relevance is basically the product of probabilities of conformance to each of the query constraints. So now, once the source selector provides us a tree of tables, it is subsequently processed by the tuple expander to provide the final answers. Let's have a look how the tuple expansion process works. It works in two phases, where first it constructs an attribute schema, which is then populated with the answer tuples. So let's first have a look at the phase one. So suppose this is the tree of tables given by the source selector to you, and this is the query. So first, while constructing the schema, this tree is examined, and since make, model, and price, all these attributes are relevant to the query, they are selected by while constructing the schema. And similarly, and then you see that vehicle type can be predicted using model name, and since vehicle type is being asked for in the query, it is also selected in the final attribute schema. Once you have this schema prepared, now tuple expander proceeds with actually populating it with answer tuples. So once you have the schema and all the constraints have been propagated to the base tables, what is done first is you evaluate all the constraints on the base tables, which may give you answers like this. We notice that the vehicle type here is not populated because base table cannot directly provide the answers for those attributes because it does not have that attribute. So the next, what it does is it starts predicting the values of non-local attributes using AFDs. So we see that it picks up the most likely values of model given a particular value. Like for Civic, Civic is most likely to be a mid-sized car, and it goes ahead and fills in the value by prediction. So this is how it generates the final answer. It populates the tuples. Now let's have a look at the learning module of the system. The learning module is an offline component consisting of AFD miner and its underlying statistics learner, which basically gets you the value level association rules. So the AFD mining, the aim of AFD mining is to learn all the AFDs which conform to certain constraints on its metrics from a given table. Now AFD mining is an expensive process due to two reasons. First, the search space for that the AFD mining process involves is exponential in the number of attributes, and now an AFD has each AFD has two metrics, the confidence as well as specificity. While computing those two metrics, for each AFD rule, you need to visit the actual tuples, which again is an expensive process. So this specificity is the new metric. Right.
I published a paper on sampling and data mining years ago. I'll give you the citation later.
So you're saying that AFDs can be learned from a sample.
Sure, from a
I think that's basically what he does.
Oh.
But what he's talking about is the number of AFDs you have to consider to see whether they hold or not. That's the first thing.
Oh,
that's what he's talking about.
No, that's so I agree.
Yeah.
If you want to get them all of them, then you need to go.
They wind up learning AFDs only from the samples because they can't just download the data they
receive. Okay.
So one of the new metrics that introduced by AFD miner is specificity, which is basically an estimate of degree of keyness of the determining set of attributes. It's based on the information theory, and it follows monotonicity in the sense that specificity of a subset of attributes is equal to or lower than the specificity of the set of attributes. Now, this is the attribute lattice that AFD mining process traverses while mining. So,
what does each letter mean? What does each letter correspond?
These are the data mining sets. It first starts with singleton sets where A attribute A determining something, then B determines something. Then it starts with sets of size 2 and 3 and goes all the way up. So. Now, like I mentioned, specificity.
This is a lattice rather than a DAG because there would be multiple root nodes. Is that correct? You only show them one here. Or not?
Sorry, what?
Well, so there's only one root node. That's all.
Right.
There can't be. Okay. No, I think I got it.
Right. So the way AFD miner works is it starts traversing the search space in a bottom up way, where it first starts with the singleton sets and starts constructing combinations of attributes, and it employs a pruning strategy where once the specificity of an determining set goes beyond a certain threshold, it avoids visiting any of its supersets because the specificity of any of the supersets is going to be no less than that of the attribute. So if you have an upper bound on specificity, then bottom of traversal of the lattice makes sense. So when AFD miner when used to mine rules which are being for work like QPRs, high confidence and low specificity rules are preferred. But in our case, what we need is more highly specific rules, because higher specificity means we are like closer to a PKFK relationship. So in our case, we have a lower bound on the specificity measure. So what we can do is we start the traversal top down, and once the specificity of a node goes below a certain threshold, we can avoid visiting any of its subsets. Now let's have.
In the early slide, we mentioned AFD between camp attribute, but here you mentioned
like
the AFD between
near multiple. Right. The example that we had, it was just for the sake of simplicity, but we can have a set of attributes determining a target attribute.
So this is all the process you're going through to learn a particular approximate function dependency. You repeat this many times.
Right. So let's see what are the pruning strategies employed by the system. So one thing is the SmartInt does not use exhaustive AFD search. It only tries to mine AFD rules where the determining set is shared across tables. For the reason being, AFDs are being used to predict values based on shared attributes. So AFDs which have the determining set like only local to the table are useless. Another pruning strategy which can be used is pruning with specificity, where you prune off the nodes and any of its subsets once the specificity of determining set falls below a certain threshold. Now Ravi is going to explain the experiments and the conclusion.
Savings because we are looking for highly specific rules.
Okay.
So
yeah. So months ago, when we were talking about all this, there was this idea that you would learn both within table dependencies and across table dependencies. Right, that's still happening?
So the system can chain across AFD. So for example,
that wasn't my question.
Right.
My question was whether you are learning within table dependencies or across table dependencies or both.
So we are learning within a table, but we are using across tables.
So you're learning them within tables.
Right.
And then what do you mean you're using them across tables? If you don't learn them across tables, how can you use them across tables?
So we make these combinations of attribute mapping and AFDs to chain across tables.
Fine. But that's a performance element.
Right.
The learning element. So you're not learning any mappings across tables. Does that not make any sense? Or does it make sense that you didn't do it?
So for our work, this AFD minor, AFDs within a table are suitable for the requirements that we have for query processing.
Uh-huh.
So mining this rules within a table is sufficient for our query processing needs.
So is it not possible that there would be information in one table,
right,
that you could use to approximately determine values in another table?
So that's what we are doing when we say based on the first tuple we have, if you want to see what's the vehicle type of this tuple, this table doesn't provide us. So we, based on this accord, we visit this table and then predict it as full size. So this is how we try to expand tuples using AFDs which have been mined within a table, but we use them across.
You evaded my question again, I think. So, could there be cases in which knowing the values in one table will let you determine approximately a value in another table? And maybe your answer is yes, but you don't want to learn those directly. You think you can get them by chaining, by doing the dependencies within tables and then chaining across tables.
Like you said, this chaining process can be done offline, so you could already, like, instead of doing it while query time, you could store these information that, okay, if you have model accord over here, what's the value it will have for an attribute some other table. You could do the same thing offline instead of doing query processing.
Sure.
Right.
Sounds to me like the only kind of chaining you're going to allow is through the shared or the mapped attributes.
Right.
And that means that there's only going to be a certain kind of single connection between things. If you needed to have a mapping, say, from two attributes in this table onto one attribute in this table, I'm not seeing how you get it.
You could do that, but all you would need is, like, you need a more complex attribute mapping. So given, say, make and model directly mapping onto some attribute here, say, make model, so all you need is a more complex attribute mapping, and then you could make use of that and along with AFDs too.
So you're saying that you would have to effectively add a new column to this other table, carry the values over. I just want to identify whether or not whether we could design some tables where, if you could do what I'm saying, suggesting, you could get some answers that your approaches would miss, or whether your really would give the same answer. I'm trying to find out whether or not you have the same functionality, and I just don't understand how it works, or whether you generally don't have all the functionality that I had imagined.
So I think when you say about learning rules across tables,
yeah,
we are not learning them, but effectively we are using the information that is available across tables. So the way we do it is, like,
I know you are, but
right.
I'm asking whether or not you're you're using it in as flexible a way as I was proposing. In particular, if there were a functional dependency between two attributes, there were two attributes of this table that let you infer a value in this other table.
Right.
And those two attributes in the first table are not mentioned in the other table and vice versa.
Right.
Can your current system get that effect, or can it not?
So no. At the moment, it can. But like I said, all you need is a more.
If you're saying that you would extend it,
right.
That's fine. I'm just trying to identify what a limitation is. So you agree that you cannot handle that right now.
So if you have those kind of complex mappings, at the moment, it can.
Okay, that's fine. Sorry, this is so hard.
And also, it's not actually reasonable for you to say that all you need is those complex mappings, because if there are people out there giving you those complex mappings, they could also give you AFDs.
Yeah.
I mean,
right.
They have no
right.
other life than help you, right?
Right.
I mean, so I think the question that Pat asked is an interesting one, in the sense that if, in fact, there are, basically, you started by saying we are assuming away attribute mapping. Right, because somebody else's problem, and you don't want to throw too much to somebody else. You know, and in fact, if it becomes more and more complex mapping, then you are actually going back towards schema rewriting, query rewriting kinds of things, and those are hard to get. So you take a hit by not doing that, but that's basically
right.
what you currently have. It'd be worth pointing that out.
Question.
You mostly need to recall your build of tree. So then you have the definition of relevance.
Right.
So for a given tree and a given query, you can compute a problem.
Right.
How do you build a tree?
So, okay. So the way we do it is, once we have the relevance functions, we select we have a graph of tables. We enumerate all the trees within of that graph and come.
Like the equal property, list of all the trees.
Right, but
the table of score.
Right. But we don't like to. We put a bound on the size of the graph. That's one way. That's how we try to make it faster.
Even for the small k, like.
Right. Are there any other questions?
Thanks, Anupam. So I will just explain how we evaluated our hypothesis, and we will explain our results in detail. So the experimental hypothesis is that in the context of autonomous web databases, if you learn approximate functional dependencies and use it in query processing, you are going to get a better retrieval accuracy than the other existing approaches like direct join and single tuple. So we'll show how our experimental setup is, and
more specifically, you're expecting an increase in
F measure,
increase in precision with respect to rows, an increase in recall with respect to the columns.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's come back to that later.
Okay. So we performed our experiments over a vehicle data call from Google Base. It's like over 350,000 tuples, and then we did various partitions of the tables, and then post queries on it. So we implemented the whole system in Java, and then the databases is stored in SQL. The source code is still in development, and you can get it at Smartint. So
the source code is what? Still in development.
I mean the web interfaces and everything. Web UI. No, it's done. Of course.
Oh, yeah. So what do you mean it's in development?
I mean, we are writing like the web wrappers and for the code.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So the methodology is that since we don't have existing benchmarks for this kind of work, we don't know how to, I mean, there are no existing benchmarks to measure how the precision and recall of this kind of approaches are going to work. So what we did was, we need to have a way so that we know the oracular truth, and then we need to measure our approach with respect to the oracular truth. So what we did was, we had a master table, then partitioned it into multiple different child tables, and then issued the SQAM query on the master table and on the partitions of table using direct join or single table and SmartIn. And then we compared the precision and recall of these two approaches. This is our evaluation methodology. So before we actually show you the results, I want to just show you the two different metrics we use it at the tuple level and as well as the result set. So the first thing is, let's assume this tuple as being a tuple from the master table, like it has all the correct value attribute value pairs, and then everything's right. So, and this is going to be the one which is written by any of the approaches, either it's going to be direct join, SmartInt, or one of these. So we have two kind of metrics which we need to measure. One is the number of attributes which are retrieved, and the second is the number of attributes which retrieved are actually correct. So these two, we need two metrics which are analogous to precision and recall in a general term. So what is this? It's correctness of a tuple and completeness of a tuple. So the correctness of a tuple shows gives you how many values in this particular tuple are correct and matches to the ground truth, and the completeness gives you how many attributes you actually retrieved from the ground truth. So these two will be average over the result set. One of the correctness is actually the average, the precision is going to be the average correctness of a tuple, and then the recall is going to be the cumulative completeness of the result set. Yeah, for our system, yeah.
You probably don't want to call it that.
Okay.
I mean, these are, you can define precision and recall with respect to, I don't think you want to call them precision and recall, right? I mean, there might be sort of a row, something like column precision and column recall and row precision and row recall or something. I probably wouldn't use the generic term.
Basically, they have to be expanded. You know, in most real cases, if you keep talking, at some point of time, you start making mistakes, right? And in that sense, so if you don't have fixed bit tables, and if you can give variable bit answers, then you really have to take into account the distinction you're making.
No, I don't mind the distinction. I mind the labels you attach to. So there's a sense of precision that has to do with, well, you could have a completely imaginary row.
Mm-hmm.
And so every time you had a completely imaginary row, that would be a ding on precision.
Mm-hmm.
But you could also have a basically sound row that it would, as you expand it, you start to make errors.
Yeah.
And so I want more precise terms here to clarify this. Unless I misunderstand you.
I think he is generalizing the notion of precision. So if you look at the definition, they will become the same. Can you please show the completeness and precision?
Yeah.
So if you look at those definitions, they will become the same as the normal precision and recall for fixed bit tables.
Okay.
So this is a general notion of precision and recall. And the only thing I could say is, I mean, you're right that people have some notion of precision and recall, but that's for traditional databases.
Yeah.
And when you explain it, they in the two reviews that they had from Sigmod and VLDB, nobody at least complained in terms of whether or not to. I mean, it's just a generalized definition.
Most people don't complain about the things I complain about. I'm not critiquing the experimental design or anything. I just want to make sure I understand. It seems to me that this is an important distinction.
Okay.
Certainly in traditional,
yeah.
At least I don't know about precision recall with respect to database systems. I've seen it mostly in information retrieval systems. If you're retrieving documents or something, it's an all or none thing.
Yeah.
it's much more interesting because you can get part of the answer right and part of it wrong.
Yeah.
And so I think it's an important distinction. And it might be worth introducing new terms to clarify that.
So what you say, I mean, I actually agree with what you said. In fact, I told them that when they did these experiments that, in fact, should be explained very clearly because it's not what people expect up front, you know, because this is a tricky thing. But, so you would suggest maybe calling something like effective precision and effective recall, or just change the name, just so that people won't think that...
Well, I'm still trying to get my head around what the measures are. So
basically, each answer they are giving has a degree of correctness,
right,
and a degree of completeness. And the degree of completeness is being used to decide the recall measure, recall sort of measure, and the degree of correctness is going to be used to determine the...
I see.
Yeah. So that's basically what you're saying. And it seemed like quite a reasonable thing to do because for the special case fixed with traditional databases, they actually do become the normal traditional results.
Right.
So,
generalized.
Yeah, that's what, yeah, generalized traditional results.
Yeah, I'm not sure. Carry on that.
So the first set of experiments, like in the query, in the partial query, what we vary is the number of attributes which we ask from the web databases. So the first set of experiments are, this is for the recall versus attributes. So let's see. So as I mentioned in the introduction itself, obviously the naive join or the direct join is going to give you all the results but at the same time, if you see in this case, you can observe that the direct join has a very low precision because it generates a lot of spurious results.
Can you slow down?
Yeah.
Okay. Want to point to which of these is which because your notation is not...
This is the recall. This is recall of the smart thing.
Recall, I can tell that. No, I'm talking about the independent variable. So which of these is traditional databases?
No, it's not traditional database.
What's direct join, single, and smart int? What do those three mean again?
Yeah, the single table is like when you issue the queries on a web database, the collection of tables.
The what?
The collection of tables you have, and if you just use a single table to answer the queries rather than joining them or using any of the approach.
So just the
best
source selection on a single table.
Yeah.
And just using that.
Yeah.
All right, and you expect that to be high precision and low recall.
But in fact, it would have both low precision also because the constraint, if the constraints are not going to be mapped on that particular table, you can't get precise results.
It would be accurate in what it could retrieve.
Yeah, yeah.
But it might not retrieve as much.
Yeah.
And that, I'm sorry, how is that low precision?
No, the low precision is because, so if you are generalizing it over the whole result set, if the constraints can't be mapped onto that particular table, if you say the number of cylinders is equal to 4, there is a constraint on the other table. So you're just picking up the single table, and you're trying to answer the queries from that table. Okay? So
you're saying that if there's a attribute in the query,
mm-hmm,
that's not mentioned in the single table,
yeah,
then what? The system would ignore that?
Yeah.
And then it would find answers that could be spurious.
Yeah, yeah.
All right. So that's tricky, and you need to be more clear about that explanation.
Okay.
You could imagine a different performance system that would simply refuse to answer any queries that had attributes that were not on the table. In which case, you would have
precision
and very low recall.
Yeah.
So you made some design decision about performance systems you didn't say.
Okay.
And you would have different results if you had done it differently. They're both legitimate.
Okay.
You just need to be clear.
Okay. So the direct join is the one which actually joins the tables and gets the results. So if you can observe, you can see that the recall is obviously lower than the join because it joins the tables which has constraints on different tables and gets you the whole tuples and also a lot many spurious entities which results in a low precision for the direct join. So this is the main problem with the direct join. When we combine these two metrics, we get a improvement in F measure over the two approaches. So,
are there any other approach
which
you like between two, or
is only? No. So the whole thing about this is that there is no work as of now which identified that there could be a missing PKFK problem. So our work is the first one of the first works which actually says that in a web database scenario you have ad hoc normalization, and there are no previous works who even addressed this problem. So our system, and we didn't have any benchmarks, so we designed our benchmarks and the methodology.
These are the only
so what we did was,
sorry, what do you mean by benchmarks?
I mean, like, if you have in a traditional database system, you have track queries on which you have to evaluate your performance or...
Yes, okay,
yeah.
You're saying there's no such,
yeah.
Standard data set,
yeah.
Which I think is a good thing.
Yeah.
All right. So, you know my opinion about the F-measure?
Yeah.
You know?
No.
So what's the purpose of separating precision from recall?
Oh, sorry?
So when people separate precision from recall, why do they do that? Any idea? I mean, these are two different aspects of performance, right?
Yeah.
But generally speaking, if you change your system, I mean, suppose you've got some threshold here. Okay, if you change that threshold, you're going to increase one at the expense of the other, right? So precision will tend to go up while recall will go down.
Mm.
You know what an ROC curve is?
Which one?
Receiver operating characteristics, ROC.
Yeah.
There, so you can do the same. So ROC curves are usually done with accuracy measures, not quite the same as precision and recall. But typically, if you change a parameter in your learning system, you get an ROC curve that looks like this, right?
Yeah.
Now, the reason that's why it's important to keep these distinct. So let me just ask you why you chose to combine them in an F measure. I know other people do it. I know that you perhaps actually have trouble getting papers published if you don't do it. I want to hear you tell me why you did it, other than that. Is there any reason other than that the community happens to have that other people say so?
So we just want to know intuitively, like, if the other approaches, like, we just want to combine the two metrics so that in overall how the system is performing.
I think you didn't really hear what I was saying about the trade-off. Okay, so the F measure hides the trade-off.
Okay.
What you find in the machine learning community where people use ROC curves is they wanted to find some metric that was somehow independent of the parameters, and so they started measuring the area under the ROC curve. Now that takes a lot more runs to do and stuff, but it was a plausible. I think that's a much more sensible way to get at these kind of issues than something like the F measure, which I think is contrary to the whole idea of separating precision and recall.
Mm.
I mean, it's a particular combination, right, of precision and recall. You could have some different weightings.
Oh.
You get a different score.
Okay.
So you will occasionally find people who hate the F measure like me, and you need to be able to defend yourself against their criticism. I don't think there is a defense. That's okay.
No.
But I guess to some extent you could have defended yourself by saying that I did show recall and precision separately before combining them.
Yes.
If you only showed the third thing, you should take that lecture.
Okay.
Since you have shown the first two curves, you can say that, you know, I know that too, that's why I put both of them.
Okay.
I'm basically only saying that since, you know, if you actually, the F measure is showing what is sort of intuitively obvious from looking at the two different curves, which is that our approach is sort of making it slightly better trade-off.
Yeah. Let me make my point more politely and better too. So there's a cost to both kinds of errors, right? To errors of omission, errors of commission. If you had some decision theoretic utility function that told you how much those costs were, you could combine them. And then you get a single score. The F measure assumes that the costs are equal.
Okay.
That's nonsense.
Okay.
That's what's wrong with it. Not that it combines, but that it combines in an arbitrary way just for the sake of getting a single number. That's
okay.
What's equal about it.
Okay.
I don't object to combining them, particularly if you're like in a medical domain where you know the cost of the test and the probability that, or whatever. But that's not.
not happening here. So the more important issue is, you say that it's obvious that these two are different. How do you? How can I tell that when you don't have when you don't give me significant test scores and you don't give error bars? How do I know that these differences are believable? Anatom can chip in here too if he wants to help. I gave these guys, I mentioned this to them last night, so they haven't actually had much time to go look it up. But I mean, did you take Chip King's course?
Yeah.
So he must have covered significant tests and error bars in there, right?
Hmm. Yeah.
Did you? I don't know. You're not in trial here.
No. Well, what do you call the ROC?
Yeah, ROC, yeah.
So do you understand why it would be important to for error bars or significant tests?
Yeah.
Why?
Because the worst case and the best case, the overlap between them could be significant, and the average couldn't actually capture that intuition.
Well, yeah. I mean, more generally, the differences might be due to chance.
Mm-hmm.
And the only way you can be reasonably certain they're not due to chance is to do something like a significant test. Or a less formal way to do that would be to compute 95% confidence intervals around the points you have there, and if they don't overlap, then it's pretty obvious that they're different.
Oh.
I mean, don't get me wrong. I'm not a fan of. I mean, I think people over applaud significant tests, but I think that they often find significant differences when there's no substantial difference. Here, it's obvious you have a substantial difference. It's just not clear it's significant.
Okay.
To find the conditions for your approximate functional dependencies, right?
Mm.
So you needed training data for that.
Okay.
How many training cases did you have approximately, or do you not? I mean, would it be different for a different one?
I think we kind of used most of the data, because we just wanted the EFDs for the performance, right? So we didn't, the data wasn't changing in the web database setup, so we used the static database tables to mine the dependence.
Sure. I mean, it could be that only a fraction of the data in the table would be used to learn a particular function.
Yeah.
So the answer might be, well, it depends.
Mm-hmm.
But I can't tell. So the reason this is important is that, you know, different learning algorithms learn at different rates. It might be that if you had twice as much data, then that you would have even better results. Or it might be that you reached that already, and you might have been able to do this with a fraction of the data.
Mm.
I don't know.
Okay.
Now, granted, no one else reports this either, except a few people who come out of a different position. But it's still a good thing to think about.
Okay.
So the 150 query, we're also using the training set.
Oh, sorry?
The queries weren't used in the training set.
No. So the same experiments we conducted by varying the number of constraints in the query as well. So even in this case, we got the results similar to what we got while we changed the number of attributes in the query.
Sorry, how does this relate to your hypothesis?
Sorry? So in the query, the query has two independent measures. One is like the number of attributes and the number of constraints. So we modified both and measured the performance.
How this relates to your hypothesis?
Yeah. So in our hypothesis, we said that if we learn approximate functional dependencies and using query answering, we are getting a better accurate results set. So SmartInt is actually using learned approximate functional dependencies for query answering and reporting better accuracy.
Okay, let's back up. So you stated one hypothesis.
Okay.
Actually, you only did that after I gave you trouble for not having it yesterday.
tree.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
That's fine, but go back to your hypothesis. Okay. Now, the only independent variable mentioned here is whether or not you use the functional dependencies for query answering.
Okay.
I mean, so there's no. You apparently have a secondary hypothesis. As the complexity of the queries grows, you have a predicting interaction effect.
Yeah.
The improvement will actually become greater as the complexity of the queries grows.
Mm.
I believe you need to state that explicitly.
Okay.
If that's your intuition, then it's
yeah.
Okay.
So the
was that true?
No, I mean it depends upon the kind how the constraints are are distributed across the tables, right? So it's not necessarily true that the increasing complexity would be obviously help the.
Looks like a tree.
Which one?
Well, it looks like if anything, Martin suffers more than the others.
No, I'm not sure that he meant to say that there
yeah.
was supposed to be an effect of improvement or worsening over as the query complex increases. So in fact, if you looked at any of these curves, I mean, all you're doing is just figuring out whether this approach is better than the other approaches. Any one vertical slice will give you that. All he's doing is to see whether as the query complex increases, does it still stay the same. So for example, I make two planners and I say the second planner works better than the first planner, do I show it on just one problem, a 10 problem, or show it on the problem of increasing complexity? So this is just a complexity measure of the query.
So this is an argument for, it's sort of like generality, saying that this improvement over the other methods holds across different complexity
exactly.
Squares. That's fine. I agree now. Then it would have been better if you had explained why you were doing this experiment.
Okay.
But clearly it's going to work.
Well, we have no idea.
So we have the next set of experiments. So in this particular set of experiments, we showed that with a single shared attribute, how the results are there. So in case if they had multiple shared attributes, so you know that the join can be done on any of the potential shared attributes. So it can be done on one of them or any combination of them. So how do we account that in? So we also did an experiment to validate that. So in this case. Even in this case, Martin was performing better, has a better F measure than all the possible join paths. And then we have one more experiment where the variable with expansion. So in this case, so you know that Martin chains across the tables in the tree, and as you keep chaining across the tables, it might happen that the predictive accuracy decreases. So when do we actually stop the expansion is to have a proper trade-off between when you are actually losing a lot of recall or gaining a lot of recall or losing a lot of precision. So this is going to be how the precision and the recall are changing with the number of attributes predicted across the depth of the tree. So these are the learning experiments on how the specificity metric has actually improved the time and the number of candidates visited in the lattice. So you can obviously observe that the FT miner actually takes less time and visits the less number of candidate sets than without using a specificity metric like SANE.
So wait, AFT miner is your system?
Yeah, FD Miner is Arvind Kalagottu system, so we extended out that system over.
So, now I'm confused. So FD Miner was someone else's system that you modified?
Yeah.
Okay, and this is comparing AFD Miner to TANE?
Yeah, it's the node specificity is TANE.
When I saw this yesterday, I
No, no.
But you did change it.
Yeah.
And so for some reason you didn't compare to those two?
But the thing is, the problem with that is the both have different kind of travels, right? And the kind of rules which we wanted to mine and is different from both of the systems. So
why are you doing comparison to anything?
Actually, I think I was just writing here that you should even have shown this.
No.
Because I basically, the only reason, I mean, they use AFD miner in this particular case. They really cannot take any credit for the efficiency of AFD miner. They wound up having to change the specificity being used in a different way. I think part of what happened was, they must have gotten into this view because during the, I think, the VLDB, feedback, very few people wanted to know, they also did not know AFD miner, so they said, this stuff seems to be new, how does it compare it to chain? And so they actually showed, and then he wound up putting it here that it does not flow because this is not really part of your contribution.
I thought you told me that one of the changes, you made two changes to AFD miner.
Yeah.
One of them was that you preferred more specific things.
Mm, yeah.
So you were searching from specific to general rather than the reverse. The other was that I thought you were using greedy search to the space of features. So that's good.
No, I mean the specificity actually makes directs the search in a greedy manner, right? So it actually prunes off and goes towards the rules which were more specific.
The previous version of AFD miner did not work out.
Yeah.
It was finding.
No, even it was not doing exhaustive search in the previous AFD miner. It was also only looking for the rules which were more interested in the QPR kind of work, which are like.
It found all of them and then picked one.
No. It was not doing that.
They both get text of AFD. In the case of QPR, an AFD which has more generality is actually preferred because you can, by rewriting the query, you want to get as many tuples as possible back in that case. In this case, it turns out that in fact the more specific, the better, because in essence, what they really would have liked to do is have a PKFK and make join.
Well, let's hold on it for now. I'd like to come back later and get the details about those changes because I still don't understand.
So this is the your normal system, how the web database is, what we developed, the smart web database integrator. So the green cells are the ones which are actually true compared to the original master table, and the red ones are the ones which is not true compared to this. So just let's have a quick demo. I mean, the query is hard-coded, and so we'll just. Yeah, it's connected. So this is kind of the smart int results set, and we can also get the direct join results here. And actually, I think the single table thing is not yet done. So I think this is being.
It's not yet done. Means it doesn't have a web interface.
So the next so. Let's go to the conclusion and the future work of this particular thing. So let's look at the conclusion. So autonomous web databases have a large number of problems like missing data, imprecise query, and ad hoc normalization. And one important issue which we covered in our work was having the missing PKFK values. And we showed that the system had given good improvement in accurate results for single table and direct join. So DBO, so if you have just looked at the initial slide where we mentioned that the complete data, certain query, and lossless normalizations are the one which are required for accurate results, the web databases have incompleteness, impreciseness, and ad hocness, and which result in probabilistic results. So given this kind of different problems which are usually found in a web database, DBOCHAN has been working on it for the past few years, and there has been many systems which have been developed.
Sorry,
so,
what's DBOCHAN?
It's the Rouse group for the DB thing.
Okay. You might want to say the DBOCHAN group or something.
Okay.
As we are working here, we are doing more stuff.
Okay.
So the previous work which handled incomplete data was QPR, where VLDB 07, VLDB journal 09, we had publications in that, and ImpressX query was addressed in MQ and QUIC, which are published in ICD and CIDR. So our system is one more addition into this this different system. So and SmartTint is submitted to ICD 09, and it counters the ad hoc normalization problem in the context of web databases. So let's have a look at the what future work we are planning to pursue. The first thing is we have to can we use SmartInt as a backdoor join, because if the SmartInt is going to perform as good as a traditional query processing mechanism on in a traditional database setup, and then we can make a good then it can act as a good generalized solution for both traditional query processing and autonomous web database processing. So because in the traditional query processing techniques do not scale well at all for the autonomous web database, whereas SmartInt gives you a good accuracy over autonomous web database. The next thing is, as of now we are considering mostly the horizontal aggregation, and the vertical aggregation has not been taken into account to a larger extent. So a possible future work could be taking into account the vertical aggregation. The vertical aggregation is like the tables, if they are divided like in the particular setup, we say that these attributes are shared and these attributes are shared, right? So if there are tables with the same schema but not overlapping values, so
yeah.
Total different setup. Yeah.
That's, I believe, what you were asking when Anupam was asking the query.
Yeah.
I mean, basically you were saying if there is one more table which has the same sort of data, and you know, he tried to tell you that he's done, but he's actually not done. I don't think that the tricking method is all that direct. Because part of the issue is when you have ad hoc normalization, it's not even clear that somebody else has another table which is approximately the same way. So in fact, I think Anil is thinking that he will take exactly that one.
Yes.
It's actually an unfigured problem. That's what I thought you were asking, if we can catch on to that.
I may have been, but I was shot in the dark.
So the next thing is, how do AFT manage with high specificity? Using high specificity can discover key information. Like, does it encompass all the approaches which discover key information? And the fourth thing is the top KW search. As you have observed in the SmartInt system, you have a trade-off between the width of the tuple and the number of tuples number of tuples you have to retrieve. You have to take into account what the user really requires, whether he requires more detailed information from a single tuple or more number of tuples with less information. So taking this into account and giving right set of tuples with enough width and number of tuples is an important problem. And finally the next thing is that once you have the vertical aggregation, there is also going to be a problem of getting diverse results from the different sets of tables. So I would thank to I would
I
like
go back.
Yeah.
Forget about that. Go back to one more. So that I'm not sure whether anybody got this, but the discover key information, we went too fast. Basically, I guess you're saying there are other people who have found other techniques for learning keys.
Yeah.
And you're trying to see whether your way of finding keys using high specificity would help.
Yeah. So if you have no other questions, then
you leave, we can probably take it, you know, if they can take it, whether they come, and then we'll have to talk to you one on one each. And then, you know, you guys also can talk.
Okay.
You know, come back. Now, this can be possible.
Is this actually, let me see, is it recording?
I guess so.
Wow, that's good.